In this verse, Zephaniah identifies himself as the great-great-grandson of King Hezekiah. Now, he just says Hezekiah, but the only Hezekiah that would kind of go without introduction in terms of this time and this place in the history of Judah would have been King Hezekiah. And that would be the reason why he would even include the genealogy. His genealogy going back to Hezekiah. And that being the case, that means this is the only one of the prophetic books in the Old Testament that the prophet was actually a part of the royal line. He wasn't the descendant of the first son of Hezekiah, the kingly line, but he would have been a member of the royalty. But he also serves as a prophet. And the second thing about it is he prophesied during the reign of King Josiah. And Josiah was the first really good king of Judah since Zephaniah's ancestor Hezekiah. Between Hezekiah and Josiah, there had been a string of ungodly kings. And after Josiah, they reverted back to those ungodly kings. And so he was the first good king since Hezekiah, and he was the last good king of the list of the kings of Judah. And Josiah made a number of efforts to reform the religion and the faith of Judah, but he was unable to get the people to stay with that. And so by the time he had become king, their fate had been sealed and judgment was coming. And so Zephaniah's short message really focuses on two themes: the certainty of God's judgment, and the second theme is the preservation of the remnant. So I'm going to look at Zephaniah the two times this month that I am scheduled to do these lessons. So today we're going to look at this matter of his treatment of God's judgment. And I believe it's the last Sunday of the month that I'm also scheduled to do this. At that time, I will look at how he develops the theme of the preservation of the remnant. Zephaniah does something that I've talked about a number of times here as he talks about the judgment. He starts out with a bracket. And we've talked about this, that this is a device that Hebrew writers used where they put a thought at the beginning and the end, and everything in between relates to that. And that's how Zephaniah structures this prophecy of judgment. He starts out with a declaration of judgment on the whole earth. Zephaniah 1 verses 2 and 3, "I will completely remove all things from the face of the earth, declares the Lord. I will remove man and beast. I will remove the birds of the sky and the fish of the sea and the ruins along with the wicked, and I will cut off man from the face of the earth, declares the Lord." And so there is a very pronounced announcement of a general judgment against the world. And then he goes into some specific prophecies, which we'll talk about in just a minute. But when he ends that section upon God's judgment, he ends it with these words, Zephaniah 3, verses 6 and 7. "I have cut off nations. Their corner towers are in ruins. I have made their streets desolate with no one passing by. The cities are laid waste without a man, without an inhabitant. I said, surely you will revere me, accept instruction, so her dwelling will not be. They were eager to corrupt all their deeds." Now, the focus of Zephaniah's prophecy is very specific, as we'll see in just a second. But what he points out is that within that framework, the whole world is going to be affected by God's actions that Zephaniah is talking about. And historically, we know that is so, as we look in just a moment at the three specific judgments that Zephaniah declares against these nations. We know that many more than these ones that he focuses on were affected by this time period. During this time period, one empire was totally destroyed. the Assyrian Empire. Another empire, Egypt, was severely limited. And a third empire that people had not given much consideration to at the time that Zephaniah writes is Babylon, becomes the ruler of the world. So there's a lot of upheaval, a lot of change, and the whole world is affected. But it's all generated because of God's judgment that he is proclaiming against these nations. And so there are three specific judgments that Zephaniah makes. And we don't have time in this lesson to go through them in detail. This is just kind of an overview of what he says about judgment. But the first of those that he pronounces is against Judah. The proclamation of that is found in Zephaniah 1 and verse 4. So I will stretch out my hand against Judah and against all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and I will cut off the remnant of Baal from this place and the names of the idolatrous priest along with the priest. And so judgment is coming, and the specific reasons for that are two. One is the unrepentant worship of idols. He makes that clear in verses 4 and 5. Baal and all the other idols. And the second he mentions in verse 6, where he says, you have refused to seek Yahweh. And so you've given your allegiance to the idols and you refuse to seek your own God. And so the result of that is going to be judgment against Judah. Zephaniah 1 verse 14, near is the great day of the Lord, near, that's coming very quickly. Listen, the day of the Lord, its warrior cries out bitterly. A day of wrath is that day, a day of trouble and distress, a day of destruction and desolation, a day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and thick darkness, a day of trumpet and battle cry against the fortified cities and the high corner towers. I will bring distress on men so that they will walk like the blind, because they have sinned against the Lord, and their blood will be poured out like dust and their flesh like dung. That's the passage I used for the Bible reading. And so that judgment is declared against all the unfaithful. And in Zechariah 1 and verse 18, Zephaniah declares that there is nothing that can deliver Judah from God's judgment. It's too late. Even though Josiah is a good king and he's reinstituted the Passover and he himself has destroyed idols whenever he can, the nation has not repented, and therefore it's too late. Judgment is coming. But the second of the judgments is against Judah's enemies. And Zephaniah begins that with a general statement of judgment. Gather yourselves together, Zephaniah 2 and verse 1. O nation without shame, before the decree takes effect, the day passes like the chaff. Before the burning anger of the Lord comes upon you, before the day of the Lord's anger comes upon you, seek the Lord. All you humble of the earth who have carried out his ordinances, seek righteousness, seek humility. Perhaps you will be hidden in the day of the Lord's anger. And so there's two aspects to this passage. One, a declaration that the judgment is coming and that there is a possibility of rescue for those who will call upon the Lord. And so Zephaniah really centers on three actual sets of people in the declaration of judgment. And the first is the Philistines. In verses 5 through 7 of chapter 2, Zephaniah says their cities will be destroyed and abandoned. And with the destruction that comes to Judah at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, these cities are destroyed and the Philistine nation really ceases to exist. He predicts that these places will later be occupied by the remnant of Judah, and that is fulfilled 70 years after the captivity during the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, when the captives are allowed to come back. And by the time that Christ comes in the New Testament, the area that was the area of the Philistines is occupied by Jews. And so that was the prophecy that Zephaniah made against the traditional enemies of the children of Israel, the Philistines. The second is Moab and Ammon. And Moab and Ammon are two nations that were related to Israel. They were the descendants of Lot through the two sons born of his incestuous relationship with his daughters after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. And they had despised Israel throughout their history. And when Israel was traveling from Egyptian bondage to the Promised Land, these two nations tried to thwart that trip. And the whole time that the nation of Israel existed in the land that God promised, these nations served as enemies. Many times David conquered them, and for a lot of that time they were subservient, but they never were loyal. And they were really enemies of the children of Israel. And so in chapter 2, verses 8 through 11, God pronounces judgment on them because of the way they have treated Israel. And he says their destruction will also be total. He says the judgment on Ammon and Moab will be as complete as was the judgment on Sodom and Gomorrah. And so we look at that story in the Old Testament and we realize when God pronounced judgment on Sodom and Gomorrah, nothing was left but ashes. And so, again, these nations vanish from the face of the earth as a result of this judgment. And then the third one is interesting. It is Ethiopia and Assyria in chapter 2, verses 12 through 15. And I'm going to tell you, this is probably a figure of speech concerning the great powers of that day and that time. Ethiopia, which was to the south of Egypt, was a great power, and they were an enemy of the children of Israel. The Ethiopian armies attacked Jerusalem at one time. They were allied with Egypt, and Egypt and Ethiopia allied with Assyria to the north. And so I think it's one way of saying from the south to the north, these enemies that attack Judah, God's going to take care of them. And the major focus of Zephaniah in these verses is on Assyria. And it includes the prediction of the destruction of Nineveh, which was the capital of Assyria and one of the great world cities of its time. When that happened, Cush, which was Ethiopia, and Egypt were aligned with Assyria to stop Babylon, which was coming from the east to the west. And Nineveh fell in 612 B.C., some 30 years after Zephaniah made this prophecy. And at the famous Battle of Carchemish in 605 B.C., combined forces of Assyria, Ethiopia, and Egypt were defeated by Nebuchadnezzar. And the Assyrian army, empire, effectively came to an end. And Babylon went as far south as Egypt in the expansion of their empire. And then finally, Zephaniah directs his attention specifically against the city of Jerusalem in chapter 3, verses 1 through 5. And I think that specifically Jerusalem is identified here because it was the center of government and religion for the country of Judah. But there in Zephaniah 3, verses 1 through 5, Zephaniah says, "Woe to her who is rebellious and defiled, the tyrannical city. She heeded no voice, she accepted no instruction. She did not trust in the Lord. She did not draw near to God. Her princes within her are roaring lions. Her judges are wolves at evening. They leave nothing for the morning. Her prophets are reckless, treacherous men. Her priests have profaned the sanctuary. They have done violence to the law. The Lord is righteous within her. He will do no injustice. Every morning he brings his justice to light. He does not fail. But the unjust know no shame." So as we look at that, again, we understand that Jerusalem is specified here because that's the center of all things that are Jewish, all things connected to the nation of Judah and its functioning. But Zephaniah points out three sources of Jerusalem's problems, the three P's, their prophets. And if you noticed in the text, God doesn't say my prophets, he says your prophets. And if you recognize this from the historical books of the Old Testament, whether it be the nation of Israel when it split off, or here in Judah, whenever God raised his prophets, there were other supposed prophets that would often oppose what they said. And God says, those are your prophets. You don't like what I have to say, so you have your own people, and they tell you what you want to hear. And so when God's prophets were saying, if you don't repent, God will destroy this city, their prophets were saying, this is God's city. He would never destroy it. And we're trying to counteract the message of men like Zephaniah and like Micah and Isaiah, other of the prophets. And then he says, you're priests. And for the most part, the priesthood collaborated with the idolaters. There were good priests. And the high priest at the time of Josiah worked with Josiah. But the priesthood was a large bureaucracy by this time. And so what he is saying is the priests are as much at fault for the problems that are in Judah as anyone is. Because rather than standing up for me and what is right, they were willing, if you wanted them to, they would offer sacrifices to Baal. They would assist in your idolatry. And then thirdly, he says, the princes. Now, part of that could be to create a nice prophetic alliteration. It's so easy to say prophets, priests, and princes. But I think there may be more to it than that. It could have said kings, but at the time that Zephaniah prophesied this, the king was actually on God's side. Josiah was doing everything he could to turn the people back to God. And so the princes may have been more accurate, because what we know is that when Josiah's son, when Josiah died, his sons led them back into the corruption. And his sons were succeeded each other on the throne at the time that Jerusalem was destroyed and carried into the captivity. And so the specifying of the princes may very well not have been just to create an alliteration, because the alliteration is there in English. It's not necessarily there in Hebrew. But it's probably a reference to the fact that other than Josiah, the royalty was not being loyal en masse to God. Now, we already mentioned Zephaniah was a member of the royal family, and he was God's true prophet. But him and Josiah were pretty much the exception to the rule of the way the family acted and ultimately was responsible. Thus, this first portion of Zephaniah's prophecy is one of condemnation and judgment. The final portion, which I'll look at the end of the month when it's my turn, is a message of hope and redemption, not for the whole country, but for those who, in spite of the unfaithfulness of all of those around them, will choose to be faithful to the Lord. Chris is going to say the prayer, and then we will be dismissed to our classes.